This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Coming up next, conversations on human rights with Speak Up, Kōrero Tia, here on Plains FM.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak Up, Kōrero Tia. Tune in as our guests Speak Up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right.
Kia ora, welcome to Speak Up, Kōrero Tia. I'm your host, Sally Carlton, here in Christchurch. Today's topic is resources in the city, and we're doing this in conjunction with FESTA, the Festival of Transitional Architecture. That's on in just a few days, the 21st to the 24th of October, and this year's theme is We Have the Means. We're lucky to have Jessica Halliday, the festival's director, here to talk with us. What is FESTA? Who's involved? These sorts of questions. So Jess, it's lovely to have you on the show.
Thanks, Sally. It's a pleasure to be here.
It would be fantastic just to kick off if you could maybe tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into working with FESTA?
I'm an architectural historian. I have a PhD in art history, but I never wanted to be an academic, and I've always been interested in public facing information and education and participation in architecture and the city. And there isn't a job in New Zealand that I wanted, and so I was making my own up when the earthquake hit, and then with a working group that came up with the idea of the festival, they all looked at me and said, you could run it. And so I just said, yes, I could, never having run a festival before.
So FESTA is about trying to fuse architecture and people power.
Definitely, actually, and that's a really nice way to look at it, because architecture is often something that excludes people, at least in its generation and its making, because unless they're major public buildings or decisions about public buildings, even then we often don't get to participate because it's really expensive and complicated. So how do people get involved is a really important question, and FESTA is one of the ways that we explore that.
Do you think FESTA would have happened without the earthquakes? Or a kind of non-earthquake FESTA, that sort of idea?
Well, I guess there are events that are kind of similar around the world where you have temporary works of architecture. But none of them, I mean, that I'm aware of, have this particular context. And I can safely say that the group of people that conceived FESTA in 2012 would not have come up with it without the earthquakes. It was most definitely a response to the earthquakes. Our challenge is now, how do we keep making FESTA relevant when the city is rebuilding?
And how are you seeking to do that?
Well, we realise that FESTA is a great vehicle not only to engage people in the city, to give them an excuse to come in and build those bonds with the city and with each other, but also a potential way to catalyse change in how and who makes our cities. And that's really what we're trying to do with this year's theme.
We have the means. And if you could maybe talk us through the theme a wee bit.
Okay, so I think it's easiest to explain it by talking about where it came from. And so We Have the Means is inspired by the practice of superuse studios in the Netherlands, an architecture practice who design architecture and urban projects and interiors from waste streams. So they identify waste streams in their environment that are suitable for reuse in architecture, and that's the basis of their design. When they start a project, they don't think, oh, what's this ideal solution? It's spatially and architecturally, in terms of program and plan, they go, what materials are available that have already had a first life and that we can put to a second life with our design? And that's a radically sustainable practice. And while there are threads of people in New Zealand, you know, a few architects and designers who are looking at this kind of practice, and Rekindle has to be one of the biggest advocates for this from a design perspective in New Zealand, it's not a big movement, and it's certainly not a huge movement within architecture and urban design and landscape architecture. So we thought we can use FESTA as a way to explore what this practice means, could mean here, and to create some public attention and awareness of it, and to create some awareness and enthusiasm for it with architects and designers. And so we've deliberately tried And we're really lucky that Josta Krieger from Super Youth Studios agreed to be the creative director for our major project this year. And in doing that, we've deliberately tried to engage a range of audiences with that practice. So we've targeted working with students, which we always do for Festa, with architecture and design professions, including landscape architects and urban designers, as well as other forms of design, in this kind of design methodology where materials are, waste materials are selected as the basis for a design. And we've also tried to engage, most importantly, the public in this sustainable practice. So we think the festival can become a kind of a catalyst for testing or trialing or demonstrating different kinds of practices that could be of use here. Not as well as a fun celebration, a really good night out for those who are in Christchurch over Labour Weekend, with our big event Lean Means on the 22nd of October. It is an excuse to do that, but also to test these other ideas.
Do you have any idea of how you might gauge down the line if these ideas have been picked up into practice?
I think, well, when Jos was here earlier in July and August, we ran a series of workshops with him across New Zealand, design workshops, and so we've started. The people that attended those are people we hope will keep in touch with us and will let us know if and when they start to use this kind of practice. And usually, because of the theme of Festa, because Festa is sort of demonstrating this kind of thinking, we hope that we'd become a natural point through our Te Pūtahi program of a way that people can tell us that they are doing this. But it isn't, you know, it's such a big field. Even in New Zealand, you know, there's always new projects, especially smaller projects where this might be applied in interior are much harder to kind of track, depending on the design literature. But we hope that through those workshops and the students that we engage, that they'll keep us informed.
Maybe if you could just inform the listeners too, what is Te Pūtahi?
Te Pūtahi. So Festa evolved last year. We were just running the festival. And then last year we decided to become biennial. And with that, at the same time as becoming biennial, we realised that there were other ways we could achieve our purpose other than running a festival every second year. And, you know, there's sort of a whole way that we can, whole wealth of other ways that we can engage people in the subject matter of architecture and urbanism and participatory design. And so we evolved Te Pūtahi, Christchurch Centre for Architecture and City Making, which is a bit of a mouthful. But this is our vehicle for running projects and programs year round that aren't just, so Festa is the biggest event in our Te Pūtahi program. That makes sense.
Yeah, so Te Pūtahi has become the umbrella.
The umbrella, yeah.
And we're hoping actually to speak with Anne Cunningham, your colleague, at some point and do a show on kind of reclaiming the city, that sort of idea.
Great.
You've spoken about the people, the students, the landscape architect, designers, all these sorts of people who are getting involved. You also touched on involving the public. And I guess I wondered, how are you planning to do that? How do we draw people in?
So we started by doing, with Festa, an open call for proposals, and then we had a whole range of individuals and organisations start to propose events for the festival programme. So the festival programme's got really, we have our large headline event, which this year is called Lean Means, and we invited a whole range of architecture schools across Australia and New Zealand to join that, and seven of them have taken that up. And then we have an eighth who's participating through different events, and that's the rest of our program. It happens over the weekend outside that big main event on Saturday night. And a whole wealth of local organisations and other ones, so like from outside New Zealand, have proposed projects and events to happen over the weekend. So that's one way that people have got involved. And so you'll find events by Greening the Rubble and Gap Filler and Life in Vacant Spaces and Cultivate Free Range Press. This thesis student from the Melbourne School of Design is coming and running a project about heritage architecture. There's a local architectural historian who's looking at the reuse of whole buildings, because of course that's the most sustainable thing you can do, is not just use elements of a building, but to reuse a whole building. So she's looking at that in the city. There's kids' events and workshops that are run across the weekend. And of course you start to hear me talk about workshops and kind of speaker events. So people, I guess that's the other way, the final way that people who aren't producing an event can attend one, of course. So we hope that the public embrace Lean Means, our major project, but also all these other events, like Cultivator running a workshop about home gardening. And I think we need to rethink about what home gardening does. You know, that's really interesting. Does home gardening transform our city? And I think it does, because now we know, we talk about a local food network, and that is a portion of that local food network, is growing your own food. So there's heaps of ways to get involved across the Festa weekend.
This is a very difficult question, and I don't think anyone's really got an answer to it. But one of the issues that I see wearing various different hats that I wear is there's always a sector of the public who's interested in these sorts of events and who will come along, who are already very engaged, and they'll be engaged in this. How do we go about maybe trying to reach the people who don't already home garden, or they might do, but they haven't thought much bigger than that?
I think you're right, there is no easy answer to that. And I think one of the most important things is actually that diversity that I mentioned of the organisations and the people who are involved in, I guess, what we'd call city making. And, you know, I had an email today from Renew Brighton, who we hope will take up, they've passed on a project to someone else in the Brighton community where there's an opportunity to work with a visiting architect from Britain to create a temporary project during Festa. And so we would never make that approach to that community group ourselves. That's not a relationship we necessarily hold, but we hold one with Renew. Mm. So because we have those networks and connections, and they extend the reach to people who would never necessarily know what Festa was, or that they had an opportunity to work with this visiting architect from Britain. So I think that's really important, is using the connections you do have to reach other audiences, but also that diversity. So it's not just Festa, it's not just about us, it's actually about all those groups and their particular reach and audience, and it not just being the domain of one organisation. And that's the same with the with council. It shouldn't just be council that's engaged in leading and city making. And so that diversity is really important. And then I think you'll have a fun time when you talk to Anne about the kinds of practices that she has with participatory design. And we use Te Pūtahi to extend our reach as well.
It sounds like it's doing very well in that respect too.
Yeah.
If someone's listening to this podcast after Festa, is there any way they can go back and sort of try and capture, I mean, there's photos and things of some of the installations, but is there any of the documentation that's captured as well?
Yes, actually, one of the things we deliberately do is use our website not just to say, this event is coming, but we actually update it so that we archive every event. There's a little description about what the event was, and that stays on our website, and that kind of allows that record of what happened and who was involved. And you can trace the kind of activities that have happened over the years. And then we also deposit a lot of our documentation with Seismic at the University of Canterbury, and so that's another way. There's all our film footage and all our photos. So they have all our photos, not just the ones that we've selected and put on our website. That is largely a visual record, but they also do contain copies of our programme. So all of that's available publicly.
That's great, because I think that there's a lot of learning that can be done from these sorts of events, and particularly now it's looking not just to be a biennial 4-day weekend thing, but sort of looking at that longer term, how can the impact be made? Any final comments? How should people get involved? What should they be doing?
I think checking out our website in advance of Festa is really important. If people want to come, that's the first place to go to see what's happening over Labour Weekend. And there may still be opportunities to volunteer, so if people want to get involved that way, I didn't mention that earlier, but we're so fortunate to be well supported by wide variety of volunteers from Christchurch and from out of Christchurch. Be surprised by the number of people who contact you from outside Christchurch and say, I'm coming, can I do anything over Labour weekend? So I think our website's a good place to go and see what's happening.
Just a final question, do you have an idea of the scale? How many people are involved? How many people attend some of these events?
Yes, we do. We have to, for our funding applications, look at counting, especially for our big event. Now, that's really challenging because there's multiple sites for lean means, and you don't. It's not like you get one view, and because we don't sell tickets, how do you count the thousands of people who come through in 6 hours? But we do use the best methodology we can to do head counts in particular zones of every hour, and that's roughly why we know that about 10,000 people came to City Ups in 2014, our major event that year. So we're aiming for 10,000 to 15,000 people at Lean Means this year. A lot of it will be weather dependent. If the weather's appalling, people won't come out. If the weather's lovely, then people will grace us with their presence, just to check out the buzz and the atmosphere.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I thought City Ups was fantastic, so cool. I can't wait to see what the students produce this year.
Thank you, Sally.
Taking through people after the weekend. Marion, it must be great to be a real estate agent. You decide who stays and goes on the street. And I've checked all the records. The rent was always paid on time, and I haven't been here long. But the others are going on 5 years, and I understand supply and demand, but I also know what's right. And if you can't explain it in person, Marion, that's not a good sign. I hate it. People talk to you like you've done something wrong, so they can justify treating you like a piece of shit. Like the messiest kind of break up with the meanest kind of girl. Marion, it must be great to be a real estate agent. You decide who's good enough for the streets. That's not me. Houses whiter shades of white, and putting up those Franklin Road fairy lights. Now I understand how a suburb goes from a slum to a snobville. It starts with Marion Bates real estate. Marion, I hope it's great to be a real estate agent. Me out of my streets. Marion, it must be great to be a real estate agent. Marion, I hope you get a wonderful sleep.
No mai hoki mai. Welcome back to Speak Up Court Editor here on Plains FM 96.9. You're with Sally Carlton, and we were just talking with Jess Halliday, Director of FESTA, about what is the Festival of Transitional Architecture. Now we've got Juliet Arnott from Rekindle, which I'm excited about because I love Rekindle's stuff.
Juliet, if you could talk a little bit about yourself and rekindle, whole house, reuse some of these projects you've been involved in and the idea of resources and reusing resources.
Sure. Thanks for having me here, Sally. So I started this journey as an occupational therapist, and I suppose I always, through my 20s and 30s, had a bit of a double life where I practiced in the health system as an occupational therapist and then would go home and madly make things. And often I was making things from waste materials. And particularly when I moved to the UK, I was very aware of the abundance of resources being discarded as part of kind of a population-dense country where consumerism was high on the agenda. So I started to work creatively with waste. I found it therapeutic for myself. And then upon returning to New Zealand around 6 years ago, I started to look at how I could combine the sort of therapeutic experience of working with resources that have been discarded with sort of my sort of creative values, I suppose. So that was when Rekindle started, really. So now I'm based in Christchurch. I work both in Christchurch and across the North Island. And we started with the furniture, which was made from salvaged timber. That was unfortunately available in high levels following the earthquakes because demolition was, the process was not valuing that resource. And so what we've done time and time again is applied value to those resources. We've tried to demonstrate their value by taking care with them, by crafting them, and by, showing them to people in a way that shows respect and reverence for those resources.
One of the points that Jess made before was that FEST is about trying to engage people with materials, with architecture, with the city in a different way.
Yes, that's right. And I suppose what's wonderful about FESTA for us this year is that we get a chance to imagine Christchurch as a really resourceful city, a city that values what it has. And so in doing that, it really makes you think about, how we interact with the things we have, how we value the material resources that we interact with, or otherwise how we discard those. So FESTA this year gives us a chance to sort of explore that really positively.
Initially I was driven by wanting to make change in terms of the environmental consequence of landfilling, but realised, I suppose, over time that the more sort of powerful and vital aspect of being so wasteful is that we also lack opportunities for resourcefulness. So that's kind of become the sort of equation in my mind, is that that we need opportunities for resourcefulness. We benefit from working with waste recovered materials. It makes us feel effective and competent and valued. And so the need for resource recovery type activities for repairing things and for, you know, upgrading materials actually serves us as being therapeutic, because it develops our sense of resourcefulness. And that's what I find really exciting and a much more powerful way, I think, to talk about the meaning of sort of working to prevent waste.
That's absolutely fascinating, that the idea of reusing something has a mental impact on us.
And I think, I haven't, I'm yet to spend time uncovering what's in, academic research around that, but I'm sure it has been worked with at least in part. But I am really interested in, the fact that a whole set of people in the world are really attracted to doing that. You know, we all, well, not all of us, but many people would have a choice between new materials and recovered materials, and many of us would much prefer to work with recovered materials. And my sense of that is that it's that there's more of a transition from something that's discarded through to it being highly valued, and that transition being greater is something that really gives us a strong sense about, you know, own self-efficacy. And I think in the world today, that sort of physical experience is very valuable.
One thing a parallel that I draw listening to you is the number of people who I've heard say they're really disappointed in the number of houses that end up in the landfill from the red zone, for example. Mm, mm. They would have loved to have seen the houses, not just the physical materials, but those physical materials have over time built memories, and people's lives are kind of imbued in those materials.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And see them have another life down the line.
Mm. I think there is something inherently unhealthy about wastefulness, in that it on so many levels it doesn't feel right for some of us, you know, not necessarily for all of us all the time, because naturally we all dispose of things. But I think there's what you're acknowledging there is our relationship with those material resources, that relationship can be deep and strong, and that when we miss out on opportunities to kind of respond resourcefully to those materials, I think it can feel terrible, you know. And there's certainly been research done. I know there was one piece someone pointed me at from New Orleans after the Katrina, and I think it was a psychologist who had done a piece of research to show that just being involved in deconstruction, or even just knowing that deconstruction was happening versus a full demolition, full sort of wasteful demolition, was therapeutic for people, and it actually did have an impact. So I think that the kind of usefulness of engaging with those materials is just so important to us.
One of the, I love Rekindle stuff, but one of the things that I thought was particularly cool was whole house reuse, and this idea of taking a house from the red zone that would otherwise have been demolished, put into landfill, and making just a whole raft of stuff from it.
Yeah, it was really exciting, I think, to see the amazing energy and drive of all of the creative people, from young children to older, very experienced craftspeople and designers and artists and architects and all sorts of people who really had the will to make that material feel valued and to address really what was quite a sizable amount of material, it was very heartening and exciting to see all those different designs come together to value those materials in that way, and then to see those objects that were made from the different parts of the home then go on and be used in their sort of next life. So that's exciting. We're hoping at some point to document that with some photography that sort of shows where those objects made from the home ended up and how they're being used. So
that's cool, because it was such a massive documentation process. I know you documented every single piece of material that came out of that house.
So that's right, yes. Huge. Yeah, Kate McIntyre, who ran that part of the project, worked incredibly hard with all these volunteers to do that. I think I remember her saying that it took 30 days to do the cataloguing of the materials from the home. So it is an extraordinary resource, and we've certainly had some interesting outcomes from that. In fact, at Festa this year, at the symposium on the Monday the 24th, we have an academic coming from Perth, Dr. Atiq Zamam, and he's going to be presenting a piece of research which effectively quantifies the impact of whole house reuse. So he's going to be talking about the environmental impact of diverting those resources from waste, and he's also going to be talking about the economic impact, so the sort of economic value that was created via the valuing of those materials.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, it will be really interesting, and I think it will be a really useful way to consider the value and the broader impacts of reuse, that it's not just about what we don't send to landfill, it's also about how that in a monetary sense, but also more than that, also it's about the valuable work that it creates and the meaning of that work to us.
One of the other projects happening at Festa is Zero Waste Ōtautahi, which I think Rekindle's involved in. How do individuals, however you're framing it,
become zero waste? And I guess, what exactly is it?
It's a very good question. So I guess I chose the title Zero Waste Ōtautahi because zero waste is an internationally recognised approach to achieving a reduction of waste. And it's a controversial kind of term, I suppose, because it is kind of radical sounding, and it's not really accurate in the sense that zero waste is what we're aiming for, because actually organic waste is useful to us. We need it to maintain biomass. But really the way I think about zero waste and how I apply that term is that it's about zero harmful waste going to land and water and into the air. So for the purposes of Festa this year, we're basically creating an experience on a vacant site on 326 Montreal Street where people can come and experience a world where our relationship with resources is different. So there's going to be a whole lot of wonderfully skilled craftspeople and designers working on that site for the weekend, making objects in a way that shows a high level of value and understanding of the qualities of these material resources like timber and textiles and clay and different things. And so that's one part of the experience. And another part is that we're mapping businesses across the city, businesses and markets and charitable enterprises that provide services that enable people to reduce their household waste, so to reduce packaging waste, and businesses that enable people to reuse resources. So basically, Zero Waste Ōtautahi is about the two top priorities in the Zero Waste framework, which are reduction of waste and reuse. And so businesses, in effect, can get in touch with Rekindle and ask about being on that map if that's something of value to them. It's essentially a map for the public that helps people find ways to avoid packaging and household waste and find opportunities to buy secondhand, which is a really valuable zero waste strategy. And in fact, on that note, again at the symposium on the Monday, we have another academic coming to Christchurch, especially Jonathan Hannon, who's coming from the Zero Waste Academy at Massey University. He's also going to be presenting a new piece of research, which was commissioned by the Palmerston North City Council, and it quantifies the value of the resources that flow through the second-hand market. It's the first time that's been done, and it's very exciting because I think typically, we underestimate the value of that market.
I guess with this research that's coming out, and also your sense, I guess, working in the sector, if we want to call it that, do you have a sense of the uptake of these sorts of things? I mean, once you've mapped the businesses, for example, do you envisage a lot of people wanting to work with, work from, buy from those companies, or is this still to be decided, determined?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's very tricky. I mean, of course, what we've found, I suppose, in talking about this is that often one of the biggest barriers to sort of eliminating, say, a packaging from in the way that you shop is that it might involve extra time or a change in habits, like taking your refillable bags or containers to the shop to fill it with the food without the packaging. And so those sorts of time use choices are difficult to predict in terms of change. But I think we, and I suppose that's what FES is about, is it's about presenting information in a positive way and imagining the world being different in that sense. And I'm hopeful that that's what we'll start seeing bit by bit afterwards.
So what are some of the things people can do in FESTA to, I guess, get a taste of how they might envisage their city differently and perhaps build some kind of long-term change as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think if visiting our site for FESTA, you would see that, I hope that you'd see some inspiring ways in which we can interact with the material resources we have. So coming and seeing that and thinking about the way that you value the resources that you have around you, the way that you reuse things rather than buying new, that kind of thing. So coming along there, you'll also see there that we've got someone making underwear from waste materials. She's designing a new type of underwear that allows people to make their own from textile waste.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, actually. Sylvia's doing a great job with that, so we're really excited to present that new work. And then just simple things. The two main strategies are really using refillable bags and containers instead of buying packaging all the time, and buying secondhand. So those are the two solutions, really, that if they can be at front of mind would make sort of a considerable change. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool to hear, and I hope that faster, but I guess longer term as well, these sorts of initiatives really do start to encourage people to think about it.
Mm.
Have you got any final thoughts before we move on to speaking with Jos, who's here from Holland, actually, for FESTA?
Yeah, I think it's just a really exciting opportunity at FESTA for us all to gather together in the city and to celebrate really what's possible with reuse and how creative that process is. So I look forward to seeing everyone in town this weekend.
Thank you so much, Juliet, for coming in.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Sally. Cheers.
Thank you.
Kaimaru Mai. Welcome back to Speak Up Kore Rotia, here on Plains FM 96.9. We've spoken with Jess and we've spoken with Juliet about different ways of interpreting resources. And now we've got Jos de Krieger, who's here, really cool actually, all the way from Rotterdam for the Festa. Jos, welcome to Christchurch.
Yes, thanks, thanks. It's good to be here again.
Again, so you were here before?
I was here in, my summer, your winter, talking to all the students involved in Festa, getting them up to speed with how we work and giving some professional workshops to audiences in Auckland, Christchurch and Wellington. So that was the lead up to what we're going to see next week or next weekend.
And maybe if you could tell us what is it you do and how is it that you've got involved in Festa?
Actually, that was sort of by chance. 10 years ago, Jess saw an exhibition in Rotterdam where we were featured, and she always remembered us as an interesting firm. And she talked to Juliet about that, and she has been to our office in Rotterdam about 2 years ago to show her work. So we were in touch on that basis, and she said, okay, if we're going to work with an external creative director, not from New Zealand, then it should be them. And let's see if we can make it happen. And that worked out great.
So you've come in to be the creative director. What exactly does that mean, actually?
I think it means that mostly I'm there to show what we have done before, to inspire and sort of try to kick everyone who's involved to another level and go from the mere basics of reuse to architectural reuse or... well, just to another scale. And mainly it's, yeah, sharing our thinking and getting the students involved in what we do.
So you're here from Super U Studios, which is obviously quite well known in this space. But it would be great if you could tell us a little bit about what the kind of work, the architectural work specifically that Super U does.
Yeah, well, it's a very broad range. We do all kinds of project ranging from... small product design like lamps and interiors to urban plans and more research studies, but all are focused around flows. So what kind of flows are in that area or in that building and how can we make a better connection between them? So for example, if a building is being demolished close to the site that we are building, we're going to try to harvest materials from that building and integrate them in new architecture. And that can happen on every scale. So if you have a lot of small items, it can become a product, and you have a serial production line for a while. Or on a urban scale, it can be looking at water flows and where you can store water or where you can make nature out of it instead of just flooding everything into the sewage system.
When you say flows as well, one thing I guess I think is the flow of people. Does that come into it at all?
I think the flow of people is the main thing that architecture has always been involved with. So every architect is working with the flow of people. And we're just trying to see what else... well, all the flows we look at around 14 to 16, depending on each project, seeing which 3 or 4 or 5 that we can highlight and put the focus on. And usually material flow is one of them for us.
Speaking of materials, what kind of materials do you tend to try and reuse in your architecture?
It can be anything. It can be pretty small and pretty large, but the main thing is that it should, or preferably is unwanted by most people, or unliked, and therefore discarded or seen as waste, and we try to give new meaning to the material and new value. So one nice example is, for example, that in the steel industry, they make small metal elements for other items, and they cut them out of a steel sheet, and then you have a steel sheet with holes left. That is usually going away to iron recycling or metal recycling, and it's melted again and becoming a new steel sheet to make new small elements. But actually, it's a really nice piece of art that has an industrial quality with repetition in it that you can use for balustrades or you can use for fencing or wherever.
I can imagine that would look really cool, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, but to get there and to get in contact with the companies that have this material and that have their own system in place to get rid of it and contracts with waste companies, it's quite a lot of talking and negotiating to get it working. But currently, with one company, we have a pretty good system that we pay them more than they get as value as old iron, so they're happy with that. The company that was involved in transporting it to the metal recycling. They are still involved, but now transporting it to another company that's going to transform it. So they're still happy. They're not losing any business. There's new business involved because they are either bending or folding or cutting the steel or coating it. And the contractor and the owner still get a cheaper price than if you would buy the same kind of material new with a design that we made. So everyone in the whole chain is happy. And that's what we're trying to achieve with all materials, and not for all materials. It's possible right now. So for some, we investigate and it seems, okay, we can't make it work. And for some projects, we might still do it because it's either really nice, really beautiful. But then it won't evolve into a standard product that we try to sell to other architects as well.
You said it can be difficult working with the company at the source. How do you find it with working with the people at the end product? So is it easy enough to convince people to use these recycled materials?
If you look at the client side, most people come to us because they want to work with us, and we don't really have to convince them. And in some cases, it's just the way that we design, so we will make something or try to make something beautiful out of it and convince them by showing that. On the contractor side, the person who has to build it, sometimes it takes a little bit more convincing, but once they start working in this way and they realize what it can do for them, not just asking the question, okay, I can get this secondhand material and it's just as expensive as new material, so why would I do it? They try to, are switching their minds inside the process and coming up with their own ideas. Yeah, I could just buy this existing material for the same price, so why shouldn't I do that always, also in other projects? And that's what we're also always trying to do, is to get people to sort of join the movement, almost like a religion, trying to preach in every place where we can go, that people join in, and that's exactly what's happening with Festa right now. All the students that are just getting a glimpse in these projects of what you could do with reuse is something that they will take into every next project that they do. And it will start small with just, okay, I've got some transparent wall here and I'm using glass. And it could be any glass. I'm not fixed by a certain size, so I will see if I can reuse some glass that I have around the corner. And it will develop. So that's, I think, the main thing with Festa is getting awareness, especially in the field that makes architecture and not just in the public, because they only have so much to say in it. But if you're doing a project every few months or year, that will have a much bigger impact.
It's really cool, actually. You mentioned that companies might be more encouraged to use these recycled materials if the cost is the same. If we're thinking about the costs, can it be more expensive or can it be cheaper to work with recycled materials?
It can be both ways, and our guideline is, or our experience in all the projects that we've done, that at the bottom line, usually it's about the same price. But instead of investing a lot of money in materials, where it goes into big global companies and, well, money flows everywhere over the world and you have lost it somewhere, more money is invested in research in the materials and actual labor on site or labor around the project. So it's going to people in the neighborhood of the project, spending it again in the neighborhood or in the same city where they work. So I think that it's the same amount of money that you spend, but it's better spent.
That's really cool. What are some of the ways that you try and encourage people to get involved?
I think the main way that we do is giving a lot of talks. On average, probably there's about a talk a week somewhere.
Oh, wow.
And that's anywhere in the Netherlands, but also like my last visit in Christchurch, in Wellington, in Auckland, and in Sydney. Colleagues have been to Mexico, the States, Korea, Japan. Basically, we come everywhere. Most of the talks are in the Netherlands. All the architecture schools and even other classes that environmental studies or social studies that like this kind of thinking and can incorporate it in their class will invite us for talks. So I think that's the main way of spreading it, besides doing projects that get picked up by media. Or
is there some sort of generational element in it? I'm thinking you seem to be talking to a lot of students, which makes a lot of sense. And I guess they're the future, aren't they? So
Probably there is, but that's something that we'll only see in 20 years from now. I think that reusing materials has been around all the time. It might be a bit more prominent right now, but it has been done in the 80s and in the 70s, but especially 150 years ago, before the Industrial Revolution, everything was reused. So there was no other solution. If you're tearing down a church or you're tearing down a house, you're going to use the material because it has value, and labor was actually really cheap around that time. And we've switched that around in the past century, and probably we're going to switch back towards a system where labor, which is actually an infinite supply on what we have on the globe, which will be less expensive than materials, which has a finite supply.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, actually. Do you see much recycled material being used in architecture in New Zealand?
Actually, I was at a coffee shop yesterday, flipping through a magazine, and I think I saw one or two projects in there already. Or I'm not even sure it wasn't that magazine, but a House of the Year from last year was, I think, with a lot of recycled materials. And probably a lot of people do it when they are just working on their own house. Mm. But then when they have to or want to build a new house and they hire an architect, then it's up to the architect more than it is up to the client, maybe. So I think it does happen a lot, but it's not that visible. There's not a common platform to share these kind of ideas and share, for example, detailing or the sources that they have. And what we've set up, which is actually a global platform, but most of the information is in the Netherlands, is harvestmap.org, where people can share their sources for material. So companies can share their offcuts or their standard waste materials. But also it's connected to another platform called superuse.org, where people can share their reuse ideas or designs or products get a one platform where all these people can come together and know what everyone is doing.
That sounds really cool. If we're thinking about the New Zealand context, are there particular issues here that might make the reuse of materials more difficult or easier than in other places? I'm thinking maybe the weather, for example, is pretty extreme here in some places.
Well, extreme weather, I think, shouldn't be a problem. That's just up to the qualities of the material that you're looking for, and that shouldn't change. What might be hard or harder, I don't know much about the New Zealand context, but what I've heard in my past visit is that health and safety is pretty strict, and you got to come up with convincing examples, convincing ways to show that your solution or your second-hand reused material is just as good as new. And an example that I like a lot is that for a house in the Netherlands that we did, we had a steel structure out of a recycled textile machine. So we didn't know what kind of quality steel it was. So we sat with our engineer, structural engineer, and said, okay, we're going to assume that it's the lowest quality steel around at the time when the machine was built. Make it work with that. And then we can go to building consent and say, okay, we assumed lowest quality steel, and it still complies. Do you agree that then we can build it like this? And then it's fine. So we might have over-dimensioned or made it some things too big or too heavy, but that's okay. Because the material otherwise, it was sitting there already for 25 years or so, would have been sitting there for another 25 years until someone would use it. So that's the way you can go through building consent. And I think it's lots of small steps. Because if you do a really big project and you try to reuse everything and you fail, then that will make it harder for all the projects that come after that. While if you just show slow progress and create examples that other people can refer to, for example, with glass, that, okay, they used this kind of tempered glass here, and that was fine, so if I'm doing it here in the same way, shouldn't that be fine either? And local regulations make it maybe hard compared to national regulations, which are not always the same. But I think, yeah, a lot of slow steps, you'll get there, or we'll get there together to reuse more in our architecture.
That's great. Just to wrap up, have you got any messages you'd like to give either to architects here or the general public?
Well, to the general public, I'd say everybody has either working in a firm or has family working in a firm that produces waste. And try to, just when you're there next week, look at what's going out of your company, what kind of flows of material there are, and might they be suitable for reuse in an architectural practice? If so, please put them on Harvest Map, and then to all the architects, take a look at Harvest Map to see what pops up in the next few weeks, and if you can put that to use in your designs.
Yeah, so it's a challenge to think creatively then.
Yeah, to think creatively, but also it might be really standard products in a way that, for example, metal roofing or windows or that have standard sized offcuts that can be reused easily. It's not that everything in reuse has a wonky size or is broken in a way. It can be completely new products that have been not used at all, but just have an irregular size compared to what they have on their website.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to think that there might be another life for those things out there then.
Yeah, well, there is.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in. I know you're very busy in the few days that you're in Christchurch, so thanks a lot. And for the listeners out there, Festa's on this weekend. Check out the program, festa.org.nz. And you can look at our Facebook page, our Twitter page, new Twitter account, and we'll also have transcripts online. Kia ora, Yoss. Thank you very much for coming in.
Yes, you're welcome. See you at Festa.
Yoss has chosen a song called Enter Shikari, and he'd like you all to listen to the lyrics because the song is about the fact that the system's failing, but if we all cooperate and break with some traditions, then there's a chance that we can still fix it. So a positive note to finish on.
There was a house in a field on the side of a cliff, and the waves crashing below were just said to be a myth. So they ignored the warnings from the ships in the docks. Now the house on the cliff is the wreckage on the rocks. There was a house in a field on the side of a cliff, and the waves crashing below were just said to be a myth. So they ignored the warnings from the ships in the docks. Now the house on the cliff is the wreckage on the rocks. Nothing can fix the building's flawed foundation. The scaffolding and stilts were the laws and legislation. This house was doomed, but they didn't care. They'd invested in the system that was beyond repair. When I was little, I dressed up as an astronaut and explored outer space. I dressed up as a superhero and ran about the place. I dressed up as a fireman and rescued those in need. I dressed up as a doctor and cured every disease. It was crystal clear to me back then that the only problems that I could face would be the same problems that affect us all. But of course this sense of common existence was sucked out of me in an instant. As though from birth I could walk, but I was forced to crawl. So this is